Jotunheim, the heart of the network of the gods. Miles of bone, sinew, and synapse. It's time to tear it all down. Ragnarok is coming, and it's you. Distances in the city are very subjective things. It's not really that fun to like have to, you wander for hours to get to this, right? Like, unless that there's narrative interest in that. So the realms themselves, Jotunheim is massive. Like, entire eastern seaboard, right? It's big. But you can get from one place to another very easily due to narrative convenience and also technology, right? Maybe there is a people mover or there are tram cars or you take a cyber Uber or whatever it is. But the reason I mention that is I like the idea of imagining cyberpunk like the movie Drive, like the going through the city type montage, and you reach a place that you know is far away, but it took you an indeterminate amount of time to get there. So that's a narrative conceit that I want the game to have, but you're heading toward the Brain Pan. The Brain Pan is one of the only bodies of water in Jotunheim. It is rumored, like most of the area, to be the byproduct of a fallen giant. In this case, like Ymir before them, this is the inverted hollow of a skull, but for land rather than sky. Ymir is the father of giants. Norse myth says that when his sons killed him, his skull became the sky and his blood became the rivers and so on and so forth. But in Jotunheim, this giant's skull is just the lake. When night falls over Jotunheim as it is now, there are a number of dull glowing shapes that can be seen from anywhere on the shore. The corporations forbid diving in the water, and there's a lot of speculation about the nature of those mysterious sources of light. So there are a few people around, as there are always people everywhere in Midgardian territories, but as of right now, it's relatively thin. What does the area where you all sort of hole up for a conversation look like? Do you have like a regular meeting spot that you head to, like some type of bolt hole or hideout near the Brain Pan?
I was thinking of some docks, perhaps. Do boats ever go out on the Brain Pan?
Yes, definitely. Because it is sort of in the middle of, well, middle is a misnomer. There's city all around the Brain Pan, right? So it is sometimes faster to take a boat across. So yeah, there are definitely docks and there's shipping that occurs across this massive body of water.
Okay, I think there's like a kind of like shitty dock with a couple of planks missing that leads to like this really wonky, you could call it a houseboat, but it's barely afloat. There are certain spots, if you just step, your foot's going to fall through. It's a lot of sharp metal pieces, but what it does have is some chairs, a table, and some relative privacy.
Yeah, the dock is actually comprised of, like most things in Jotunheim, fragments of bone, right? Sort of lashed together with like the off-white sort of sinew, the same sort of stuff that snapped and dropped an entire house in the neighborhood. The bits of metal on this boat are where the sort of like fascia in between the ribs that make up the bottom of the boat, the literal ribs, have broken, and they've taken like pieces of metal, of thin flexible metal, and like pounded them over the fascia and drilled them into the bone.
This was once a really good-looking boat, but poof. Now,
can I make a suggestion?
Please.
I kind of like the idea that there are little spots like this sort of all over the area that belong to the cell, the resistance cell. So it's like none of them are good or great or particularly useful. Mm-hmm. What all of them have in common is that they're like this and like completely under the radar. And it's not that any one person like frequents or uses any of these or owns any of them. It's like revolutionary Airbnb. Like, we just have this network of little sites, and just ground rules are, if nobody else is using that one right now, like, you can have it for your sorted meetings.
Can I ask a question and possibly make a suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
So did we say where our character, like, are our characters, do we all live in the Sinew? Was that established as a canon thing? Because I'm thinking about a thing.
That was the original intent, right? Was that you all live in Jotunheim.
Okay.
We started with the questions that we did because you all lived in the neighborhood of Puppet Strings.
Got it. Okay, got it.
There are other neighborhoods around Jotunheim, and if you, as Ronnie, want to have other sort of crash pads around, that's fine too.
I think that's exactly what I'm going for, is like, I like the idea, A, because I legitimately, when I was thinking about Ronnie, pictured them living on a houseboat. That was just a tiny detail about them, and so this came up in a strangely opportune moment. But I think it's more than that, like, it is more than that. I think I love the idea of the revolutionary Airbnb, and I love the idea that Ronnie, as someone whose specialty is, like, moving around unseen, I kind of think that Ronnie doesn't have one place to live, but she has, like, a dozen, and she specifically lives in kind of all of these, like, crash pad Airbnb, like she has spent a week in this houseboat, he has spent, like, a week over, he was in Puppet Strings for a month, like, he spends time in all of these crash pads, as, for lack of a better way to put it, like, this is their project, right? Like, their project is going from crash pad to crash pad, and, like, actually making sure that it looks kind of lived in a little bit by living in it. But, like, I picture Ronnie as the caretaker of these Airbnbs, right? Like, it kind of fits their kind of drifter nature. It kind of fits a lot of things to have her be the person that, like, floats from spot to spot, from sort of houseboat to apartment to all these things as their way to be like, this space is clean, secure, I have scoped the whole thing for bugs, like, this place is good, and if anybody wants to use it, like, I'm not claiming it because I got 11 other places that I live.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. I can imagine that as you're coming into this, you, like, mentally check your calendar and you're like, well, it's been about 6 weeks since I've been here. Doesn't really need much, you know, just kind of like you straighten something on the wall, like, you know, take out something and pound a nail in, or
I walk in and I point to like a little mini fridge and I'm like, there are like 3.5 beers in there if anybody wants something.
Yeah, I call dibs on not the half one.
I'll take the half. That's fine. Thanks. I like to finish what I started.
Oh, gross.
Are there any electronics around? Is this, well, let me put it this way. And I mentioned this specifically for B because we haven't yet met your giant.
Mm-hmm.
And Jotunheim being known as the network, basically every bit of organic material that is around is technically connected to the massive computer network that the gods use for all of their stuff. In other parts of, in other realms, you know, tendons have to be strung like wires, right? Or you get like fiber optic cable, or you know, a place has to be wired up. In Jotunheim, it's all kind of like Tesla coil-esque ambience. Like there's just enough organic stuff around that there's basically Wi-Fi everywhere. Mm-hmm. Depending on where you are and what's around, like if you go out onto the water, the signal is going to fade. But I like the idea of in these safe houses where you don't have to risk like exposure because the giants are not supposed to bond to humans. They're supposed to be subservient to the gods and running computer networks. I like the idea that when you sit down in a place like this, your giant like flows into the walls.
That rules. That rips.
And like relaxes out of your body, your brain into a safe portion of the network, a firewall.
I think the visual of that would be beautiful. I'm picturing a lot of like yellow and blue lights, like this little crappy dinghy that poor Ronnie seems to live in. It really looks unimpressive until Aki just kind of tosses herself in a chair and with like she kicks up her feet, kind of like kicks off a boot and he's really comfortable. And then just like a wave kind of comes out and it glows with like that blue and yellow ethereal light. And it almost lights up this entire houseboat for a second. And then everything just feels that much more lived in, that much more real around you. And you don't feel so, well, I don't feel as alone. Not that I ever am alone.
I think I lean over to Idis and I'm like, that never stops being cool as hell.
I know, right?
It's not real. It's not fair, frankly.
As you say that, Ronnie, you get the sensory impression of like a massive hand sort of clapping you on the shoulder companionably. And then you don't get the sensation of it like lifting away. It just fades. And your shoulder tingles a little bit like your arm's asleep.
I'm great. How are you? It's been so long. It's great to see you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
She's good. She's been having a bit of a day, you know. She doesn't like it when I do things to help. She'd much rather go and cause more chaos.
An old panel on the wall sparks, like kicking a spark directly in front of your face.
Okay, now, I can gossip all I want. You know that.
Probably thrilled, frankly.
The houseboat grumbles.
Hey. Some of us have to live here. Respect the merchandise. Some of us worked hard on this houseboat.
Did you? The hole at the entrance.
I put a lot of effort into making this place look as run down as it does.
I mean, that I could believe. Crack open one of the new beers.
I think new is probably generous.
New.
Yeah.
Unopened, maybe.
There we go. Unopened. It's a little flat at this point, but it's all right.
I think actually what you find, ironically, is that, like, it is, in fact, like, almost brand new. Like, it, like, the outside of it was, like, dusted and, like, the paper was sanded, but the second you crack it open, you're like, this is completely fresh in an almost unnerving kind of way, right? Like,
wow.
It has that energy, it's that sort of like, this is fine? Doesn't look fine.
You take that tentative sip where you're like, you're ready for it to be gross, and then, mm-hmm. Oh, wow, no, this is not bad. Huh. Puts it down.
A lot of effort.
All right, so, like, we're done complimenting you now. I brought you here all for a reason. Seems like I've received some rather important information. A contact has reached out to me. Are you all familiar with, and he rubs his nose as if to, like, indicate a smell. Burnt umber?
I didn't think anyone was familiar with burnt umber. Have you been contacted?
Well, you could say that, I've got the right connections. Yeah.
Aki, this is huge.
Mm-hmm. Believe you me, this is why I'm telling you two first. We have to be able to make something out of this. We need to be able to actually make the changes that we've been striving for so long. This is going to be our moment.
I think Ronnie, like, the second you say burnt umber, Ronnie starts staring at her hands. Like, Ronnie's, like, staring at one hand. And, like, the second that you say, like, we're going to make the changes, Ronnie looks up and is like, Aki, can you move that mini fridge? Can you roll that out a little bit? And there's a panel behind the mini fridge, which is where there's like a bottle of actual high quality, like bubbly, like there's and I'm like, so A, this is cause for celebration just because the four of us are together. We're having a great time. But there's something about, look, I'm not one for small talk, but can I tell you all about a dream that I had last night?
Can I pop the bubbly first?
Yes, but I will acknowledge that there's a if you actually look under the pillow, there's actually a saber, which will be much cooler when you open that bottle.
What? What? Okay, I'll wait.
All right. I had the stream last night, and you know, I don't care for I had a dream where conversations, but I had the stream last night. It was stillness. It was quiet. There was a body. It was on the ground, and there were people that had killed a god. And I don't know, it's silly to say this, right? Because, like, there's a million reasons why I could say this, but all I could think when I woke up was that I had a mouthful of mint chewing gum. It was as if I had spent the last 8 hours with 8 sticks of chewing gum in my mouth and woke up with the thickest taste of mint that I'd ever had. I think that we might be on the precipice of something big.
This has never happened to you before?
Most of my dreams are about driving cool cars.
Yeah, okay. I can see that.
Which is weird because I don't drive, but that's fine. But it's, you know, that's the weirdness of dreams.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw something on TV, you know, one of exactly. Those ads for...
I do watch a lot of TV about cool cars. But this is different. This was you coming to us with this at this moment, it's... I don't know. Normally I write this stuff off. Normally I don't go in on this stuff. But this seems... I don't know. This is a weird coincidence.
I mean... I don't really believe in coincidences, girl. I mostly believe in the way of the gods.
Meh. Way of the gods, coincidence. Somebody's paying the bills. What's Burnumber got to say?
Many are asking this.
What does Burnt Umber have to say, their narrator?
So the note is, it's basically written so only a bone bonded would be able to read it, right? So not quite binary code, but let's call it, it's in hexadecimal code, right? So someone with enough time and energy could sit down and figure it out. So even then the language is cryptic, but with a bone bond, with a giant reading through your eyes, like it's instantaneous. Grawa just told you what it said. I have information that will further your goals. Meet me tomorrow in the Twitch. Bring anyone you trust. Limit 3+1.
I recount that word for word right down to, and can't really bring any more than 3+1.
Oh, you made me your plus one.
The walls pulse.
Come on, Ronnie. Well, what do you say? What do you think? Is this something we can trust? I've worked so hard to contact Burnt Umber. This was not an easy task, believe you me. The amount of nails that I broke, the people's asses that I had to kick, the bones that I almost had to break myself. This could be everything or nothing.
It's going to be everything. It's going to be everything.
Idis, you've been awfully quiet.
It seems too good to be true, but, you know, I don't know whether to trust Burnt Umber or not, but I trust you, Aki.
Thanks, and I trust my strength. Looks lovingly over at the walls.
Plus, I don't got a lot else going on. They canceled karaoke night.
Is that because the house crashed?
Yeah.
Ah.
They figured everybody was kind of bummed. They're not gonna... So I got nothing else going on.
It's hard to spring back from that.
Okay. If all goes well, I mean, I'd love to join you next week. My throat's been a little rough, but you know, I think I got some scream left in me.
I think the rough throat makes it better, frankly. I think that's really where the magic happens.
Well, who knows? This time next week, we could be singing karaoke as free men.
Mm-hmm.
Stranger things, am I right?
Pass over the saber to you and I'll hold out the bottle.
All right. Everybody, you might want to take one hand and cover your face just in case. I'm not gonna say that I've practiced this at all.
I'm not worried.
Ooh, is this the good stuff with the light-up bubbles?
Yeah. Which doesn't make it extra explosive, though, so really, I'm not kidding. Cover your face.
Fine.
And, Captain, I think you hit it just right. It pops open, and it starts foaming out and pouring into the glasses, and as soon as the liquid comes in contact with the oxygen, the bubbles effervesce into different colors. So it's just like you're literally pouring a rainbow into each glass, and you sort of do the three glasses, you think for a second, you pour a little bit onto the floor, and the floor pulses.
Of course.
And then I think all three of you sort of toast to the beginning of a new bright future. And I think that's where we're gonna call gameplay for the night, just because we've got some narrative stuff going on. Mm-hmm. My brain is currently spinning about other things that I want to debrief a little bit. And
also because that's an extremely cool button.
That's an extremely good button.
Yeah, it's also a really fucking good button. So yeah, one.
That rule.
Holy shit, that was dope as hell. I loved so much of that. I was very pleased with it. And I realized that a lot of it was just story stuff, right? Just role-playing off of each other. But that is fine, because I think the purpose of doing sessions like this is to find a way to formalize those kinds of things so they can happen. Because like, this is my favorite kind of game experience, is when four talented people get together and get to like just do what we just did for an hour. So I really, really like the idea of being able to pick up and plug in anyone from the cell that fits the job, right? To, if you've introduced them as an NPC and they're actually part of the resistance, then the idea of playing them in a scene is really, really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
The way to do that, though, completely changes how characters are statted out currently, because trying to come up, it took us, what, 15, 20 minutes more than that to come up with these characters in session zero, right? It took some juice. So the thing I wrote down is that the community or the cell is what has the stats, right? So everyone's working off the same stat pool. That way you never have to change out stats when you're changing out characters. If you have to roll dice, you're always going to be working from the same basic numbers you put together. What the characters would then have is their clan. Like, there would be specific clan abilities, but rather than assigning dice at the start of the scene, like committing dice the way I have it now that we never even got to, I'm feeling how clunky that is in my brain, right? At the start of a scene, take these numbers away from your thing and put them over here. And then, so like, there would be, say, 5 or 6 dragon abilities, right? Just, or bone bonded abilities. And you just say, okay, well, this bone bonded has this ability. It has an evocative name, some indication of what it can do, and you can look up the mechanical reference for it very easily, right? So you know that if you need a fixer, right, you're going to bring Cap'n into the scene because Cap'n's going to have a snake thing that lets them get stuff. So I think that until we meet other members of the Resistance for what we're doing, you probably end up playing the same characters more often. But like, if you have a moment where you make an NPC and you're like, no, this person really rules. I really want to see the world from their eyes for a little bit.
That we can just like quantum leap and have a good time with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Love it. I love that. I love it so much.
Yeah. Then you name them. The narrator gives them sort of a high concept. The players each add a detail. You pick a power, a clan and a power, and you're off to the races.
I love that.
And suddenly we could have had, what's her name? We could have had Bendis portrayed in the scene. And I marked on the NPC slide, Burnt Umber is highlighted in green. And in my mind, that means down with the Resistance, right? Like, is ready to just do the thing. Whereas Bendis is a yellow because Bendis is worried about her community, right? And acknowledges that toppling the gods would be a great thing, but how do people get fed, right? And then you can have NPCs that are hard red, that are like corporate shills that aren't going to do anything. And one of you could even say, no, I totally want to play that guard we just created, right? And then suddenly you're having an antagonistic conversation about how to break into a building.
That's really cool.
And you're like, that was cool. I'm gonna jump back into the character I was playing before.
Cool.
So yeah, so it feels like the kinds of stories that I want to tell with this game would be better facilitated by that kind of thing, because this is about community.
Yeah, being able to jump between people feels like a real boon to like a community story.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think a story like that is neat because then you end up having the same characters played by many different people throughout the course of a game, which could be really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And then it's like everybody sort of has the experience of looking through all these different eyes of the community and experiencing these different perspectives on what's happening. That's really, really neat to me.
And honestly, I didn't even think about it. Like, you just posited something really cool, Alex, which is like thinking about the idea of like using the characters that we have. Like, if we were in a scene and I was playing Bendis and B goes like, oh, I think Ronnie has a really great reaction here. Like, that's a really cool opportunity for me to be like, oh, this is what it's like to play against. Like, that's a really cool thing. And that's a really cool possibility.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, obviously people are going to gravitate towards more than one character or towards certain characters. There's no requirement to switch, right? So if you just want to play your character the whole time, that's fantastic. I think there's some real potential there. And it also is informing how I want to do this playtest. Like, I have the alpha doc written, right? But I think I'm writing the beta right now, right? And I think what we're going to, like, when we come back next time, I think I'm going to have, like, formalized the things we just talked about and build them into what we're doing and play with those mechanics and test them out.
That's really neat. There's a really cool kind of gameplay that I think this might allow, which I've never seen in, like, a tabletop game before, which reminds me of something I can only describe as, like, when you play multiplayer games, like on a console or even like an MMORPG thing where there's a phenomenon of like somebody always plays support or somebody always plays like DPS or what have you, but like you switch characters within that role, there's a really neat thing I foresee happening with this mechanic where you have a party at your table. And like, I like to lean towards playing support type characters in tabletop games. I love to play somebody who's not necessarily in the thick of the action, but is like doing cool narrative stuff on the outside. And in a game like this with that kind of structure, I could play 4 different characters like that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Because like, I could play a character at some point down the line who's like maybe, you know, the technical support background person who's like on a computer somewhere hacking. And like, I could still play the kind of role I want to play in this game, but play a character who's not Idis, and that could be really interesting and neat. And I think there's something really cool there that I've never seen in a tabletop game before, where even like if you're switching characters, you have this infinitely expanding pool of characters that you can play with. It reminds me of like playing through the Marvel Ultimate Alliance game with my brother on Christmas morning and like unlocking characters and then just playing different reskins of the same character, but like in a fun way as you progress through the game.
And I think with the right group, you can also take that. So Overwatch does this thing called Mystery Heroes, where you queue up and it just gives you whoever. And you're like, well, I always play support, but now I'm a tank. Mm-hmm. I got to figure out what to do. And it stretches you. I don't think every group is going to opt into that, but there could be a cool, like I imagine that would work in at least limited capacity with this group. So I can imagine me as a narrator setting the scene and saying, okay, NPCs 4, 8, and 12 are in this scene.
Yeah.
And you all have to go, cool, I remember them. We're them right now.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And not for a long time, but we just do it reminds me of the Matrix Reloaded, right? Where you get the backstory that's happening where they're like setting the bomb and like there are these other teams doing things.
Yeah.
And you can cut to like other teams in other parts of the city and you can see what happens with them and say something catastrophic happens and a facility blows up and we lose people. We know that, but the rest of the characters will find out later. So there's really good dramatic irony. Oh, this is cool.
That's really cool.
And thinking about the thematics of it all, like, you know, putting theme on the front for a second, like you're right that kind of play, like what it does is like mechanically, like thinking about like the characters that we have, this type of play will. And I'm going to say this, and it might sound initially like it could be a bad thing, but I think it is, for the purposes of this game, like a really, really good thing. It de-centers the three characters that we have created here today as the heroes, right? As like air quotes, like the hero, you know, which if this is a game about community resistance. This is a game about like resisting oppressive forces as like a community, and like resistances don't have... There are people that do jobs, but they rarely have like the three people that you point to and go like they knocked down. Mm-hmm. They killed the god tier. It creates a story that, to pull on the genre and the property that I've been thinking about lately, it puts you in less of a Luke Skywalker and more of a everyone else in that scene around the Death Star, which I think is like for the purposes of the thing that the story that you're building with this game is so laser pointed exactly what you want it to be.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. I think that's going to be a super neat addition. And I think it's really going to, like Jeff said, like thematically emphasize the fact that we're not the heroes. We're just like the three people the lens happens to be on, and it could have been anybody. And maybe next time it will be, you know?
Yeah, I'm all about the one thing that like to think about and that I'm kind of pushing against in my head, and maybe when I actually feel the mechanic, I might feel entirely differently, is the idea of like if we all have the same stats and it's only like this one ability, I have a concern in the back of my mind of like when that ability isn't coming up, it's gonna feel harder to like mechanically make us signify. So it might be something where let me ask you this before I finish this thought. This is for you, Tracy, and there's no wrong answer, and I happy to be asking this on mic because I think it's a good grounding point for all of us going forward. What is your stance on if we are to like maybe throw out ideas, mechanics, other things to look to and be like, oh, this does something that I think is interesting for you to look at?
Bring it.
Okay, cool.
My whole gig as a designer is remixing other things. Like, I don't think I've had an original thought in my life, so let's go.
Nah, none of us have. I was thinking about like there'd be something that like, again, thinking about the idea of making a character quickly, right? And to me, like the playing through this session today, the part that like jazzed me up the most was making Bendis and was making this character and having all of us go like, oh yeah, and this, and then putting that thing and making Burnt Umber and be like, oh, and it's probably also this thing and connecting that. If maybe, what if, like, I'm thinking of the game 13th Age does this, where, like...
One unique thing?
Yeah, not the one unique thing, but the backgrounds as your numbered skills, I think, is a really interesting idea of, like, you take your detail and you say, like, this is a detail, but it's also the time when you get to add your add extra dice or add an extra bonus to it. And then it still keeps that character creation lightning quick of, like, we're making three details. We each pick one, we each put something in there. But then, like, in play, if I'm playing Bendis and I need to hit something with an axe, I roll a few extra dice, and then it's tied to the fact that I have that axe, right? Like, it's tied to the character that we've all created together.
Yeah. As I'm looking or thinking about the abilities that I gave all of you, right? Mm-hmm. Rank 1, rank 2, rank 3. There are 3 abilities. There are 3 details, right? So if I keep the power levels roughly the same, because right now all of them are once per scene or once per session, right? So most of them are once per scene. So you can just say, okay, well, for the first detail, once per scene, you can take 2 of your die pool and set them to successes and say how this detail ensured that, right? For the rank 2, it might be like a bone bonded thing, right? Like everyone has Giant's Presence or something like that. But basically the idea of keeping what the details can do relatively static per detail and saying, okay, you have a utility detail, you have an action detail, and you have a defense detail, just for words to toss on there right now. You make those things, and then whenever detail 1 comes up, you know mechanically how to treat it.
I love that. I really love that. And just thinking, like you were describing it, like my brain went to immediately like once per session, once per scene, or at will, or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, some D&D 4E vibes coming in here. I like it.
That's, I'm going to wear my 4th edition on my sleeve and say I'm not a D&D player, but I recognize that it was the best one at what it did.
I'm not opposed, right? If you have at will once per scene and once per session as like the things that can just happen.
And you just say like, yeah, this is tied to my detail once per one, like basically whenever, you know, I'm playing Bendis, right? Whenever I need a weapon, I've got a hatchet on hand, right? Like my axes,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, at will, I can do something strong because my first detail is I'm big, right? Like I'm tall and imposing. When I need to do something physically imposing, I can just, and then once per session, if I need to break out an axe, I have an axe on hand once per scene. You know, I think that plays really interestingly.
Yeah. I like the idea of at will, you do strong stuff, right?
Yeah.
Once per scene, you can do massive damage with the fire axe. And then once per session, like you can use your metal laced hair to like tap into the network and act like a bone bonded for a scene. Like,
it's cool as shit.
Yeah. And if the scope of what these things can do is relatively known to a group, you can come up with powers as easily as you can come up with details. And that would be like, that's a streamlining thing that not a lot of games do, because there's often a sticking point when it comes to making a new character, right? It's like, oh, well, the abilities have to be this, or they can only have blah, blah, blah. If everything is evocative enough to get you making powers as easily as you make details, that's some juice right there, because that enables gameplay and you can just be like, yeah, I know who this person is now and how to play him. Let's go.
Love it.
Cool. Let's wrap this up with a quick round of Roses and Thorns, right? Everyone familiar?
Yeah.
Cool. So one thing you dug, one thing you'd change. Who'd like to go first? Roses.
One of my favorite moments was how Ronnie was able to just like passively toss in Mint into the dream vibe. I really just loved that because I thought you were just going to give me a retelling of like what B knew of the dream, but you reskinned it and reflared it with the details that we'd added into the game. And I really, really enjoyed that. So that was absolutely delightful. Thank you. What is a thorn again?
Something you would change or do differently?
I think I would detail that Aki has many more rhinestones than I initially stated. That's about it. I had a lot of fun otherwise.
Cool. Who'd like to go next?
So my rose was absolutely, I loved, I know I mentioned it a minute ago, but like my rose was absolutely like the NPC character creation of making Bendis and making Burnt Umber. That was such a joyful experience. And then a close second was like the long character moments that we were having. Like, I know that was like the driving brunt of the session, but like that was just really good. And I think that was a real triumph of like the characters that we created. And I think like making Bendis, I felt like we could have had one of those scenes with Bendis really easily. The thing that I would change is this is partially because I adore driving around montages. They are one of my favorite things. They are a real soft spot of mine. I wish that we had, you had mentioned like the vibe that you wanted from that, but like I wish that there was a way for us to like capture that vibe, like I like be mechanically prompted to create that vibe, and like whether that's just some interesting I don't know what it is, I don't know the answer, but like the thing that I would change is like something to really give us the sense that we are undertaking a driving montage through that moment, because I think that was a really juicy moment that I think we could have gotten more out of.
All right, fantastic. And Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I have to hard agree that the NPC creation and like the rapidity and the speed and the yes and energy with which that went down was awesome. Really, really cool. And I think that that is a total strength in a game like this. And I'm really excited to meet more people in the community and to like experience more of them like that.
Nice.
I think the only thing that I would like to see us lean more heavily into is that I feel like we all have definitely like a really strong hand on the ball when it comes to like the characters and the driving motivations. I feel like, and I think this is primarily just a me thing, so this is not a criticism, it's just me like voicing an interest. With pre-written settings, I think it's difficult sometimes to feel like we have as much control over the world as we do the characters inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love for all of us just to have more, I guess, input on like the aesthetic details of the world around us and leaning more into like that cyberpunky setting of it. I think it's easy to get bogged down in like these predetermined locations and like names and the Norse terminology that I am definitely not like intimately familiar with. Like I've done my reading, but I think that if all of us were just more actively involving ourselves in the creation of the setting, that it would probably be a little bit easier for us to all sort of, for lack of a better word, like jack into that particular network and really play in the space. I think that like the creation of the karaoke space was really, really cool. And like the idea of that, but even that, I felt there was a little bit of this like, oh, that place already exists. So there's this like instinctual fear of getting it wrong because It's a thing that already exists in the world canonically that like, I think we're a little bit more hesitant to play with it. We're more trying to figure out like, oh, am I understanding this right? As opposed to just saying like, this is what it is and I'm deciding that. Does that make sense?
It makes 100% sense. And there's a line that I found. I think that one of the strengths of the Iron Edda stuff that I've written prior is that while I included setting information, you didn't have to touch it at all, right? You could mm-hmm. just answer the holdfast questions and go for it. But I don't think I had a strong enough hand on what that meant in terms of gameplay or the implications of how to use what you've created. And so because this was the first session, I got really excited and went, oh, I have a place for a karaoke bar.
And I don't think that's bad, especially because mm-hmm. like what we're doing is we're showcasing that system.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are going to want to use this as a reference for what those places are. And I think that's a very natural impulse. And I think that what I'm saying is more that I think we as players probably feel some natural anxiety about wanting to do them right because this is a template for everybody who comes after us.
Sure.
And so I think I know I would feel more comfy if I felt like I was investing more into the world, like from my own stuff. I think I would feel more comfortable playing in the space.
Yeah.
And I would feel less of that hesitancy around like, oh shoot, am I going to mess something up? Like, is that non-canonical?
So something that is a very, just as a thing for us at this table, a thing that is very, very much in my vein of playing games is the only canon that exists is what we have here at the table, right? So if we decide that something is different, it is different. And yes, this is a quote unquote official representation, but it doesn't really matter. The other thing is that I'm going to definitely peel something out of Fate's sort of playbook. It's a fractal. Everything can be a character.
That's, I was thinking the exact same thing, yeah.
Then when we go to a new place, we just have to come up with a name, a basic high concept, and three details, right? And we've created a place that we're always invested in just the same as we have the characters. And because place is such a powerful component in cyberpunk literature, especially the movies we watch, right? We get these big sweeping shots of the city, and we get to like linger on these massive brutalist buildings with neon lights and whatever. We will have the room to do that, right? Because if you combine Jeff's desire to have traveling montages and you make it sort of like part of the experience, that when you're going a long distance, settle into the scene, everyone describe a detail about what traveling is like, right? Because everything's a character.
Right.
And then when you get to the new place, same deal. Everyone describe something about what the place is like.
And it's like interesting thinking it through, thinking about the session that we had, that we, I think like the place that, to Alex's point, I think the place that we most, like, as players, the place that we got the most maybe, like, narrative mileage out of was that houseboat where we really did exactly that, even if it wasn't, like, I don't remember, despite the fact that it was 40 minutes ago, I don't remember if we were necessarily prompted to do that, but we ultimately did all just sit down and go, oh, here's a neat detail about this houseboat. Oh, here's another neat detail. And then ultimately we ended up with a place in three details. And so, like, really almost like organically, we ended up doing the same kind of NPC creation around that houseboat and created a place that, like, was personal to a character, had, like, a backstory and a history to it, had a place in the broader world. And, like, I think to your point, Tracy, like, even before we even started formally talking about this as a mechanical idea, it kind of naturally formed in the session that we played out that we did that with a location. And to Alex's point, like, that location is one that is, like, close to my heart for having existed in it for maybe 40 minutes.
Yeah. And I think the fact that within the short confines of our first play session, we took one of the formalized mechanics that I hadn't even written down in the game yet, but I knew I wanted to be in there, and we did it once, and we ended up doing it a second time because, oh, it's an NPC, we need to do it. And then we did it instinctually the third time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's internalization, right? That says to me that mechanic just fucking works because we all internalized it and did it without thinking about it.
And what's cool is that we did it in multiple contexts, right? Like, doing it to a location, like, we did it the second time, we did it with Burn Umber, where we went, oh, it's another NPC, let's do it. But then we did it with that location where we took that mechanic in an entirely different context, and without, like, discussing it, without like, thinking it through, we all just went, here's some neat details about this place in the same kind of way. I think that's super interesting.
Iron Edda Reforged is a production of the One Shot Podcast Network in conjunction with the Other Dev Productions. Written and designed by Tracy Barnett, performed by Alex Flanagan, B. Zelda, and Jeff Stormer. Editing by Jupiter Aquas. Hello, Rebels. This is Tracy jumping in here at the end of the episode, as of the posting of this episode right here. The Kickstarter for Iron Edda Reforged has 3 days left. That's it. It ends this Friday, the 15th at 10 p.m. Things are proceeding extremely well. But if you want this project to continue as it is now, if you want me to be able to pay Alex and B and Jeff and Jupiter for all the work that they're doing on this project, and I know I want to be able to do that, then this project needs to get funded by the time it ends on Friday. It's a zine. It's this podcast. It is a video actual play series starring Big B's, Brutal Dan, and B Zelda. You don't want to miss it. Get on in there. Get the Kickstarter funded. Let's go. If you enjoyed this show, check out some other shows on the One Shot Podcast Network. Shows like Character Creation Cast. Character Creation Cast is a discussion podcast where Amelia Antrim and Ryan Bolter create characters in multiple RPGs with prominent guests from the games community. Each month, Character Creation Cast examines the character generation process in depth for a different game with new guests each series. They always take the time to reflect on the game, its design, and what guests have to say about it. Think of it as sitting in on a great session zero every week.